And we're back. We're breathing booze out after how many months?
Oh, we only missed one. We recorded in September. We're all just super busy in October.
It seems like a long time
since the last one.
Yeah, but
On the flip side, though, we are getting here before Thanksgiving, so this is technically our pre-Thanksgiving extravaganza.
What did y'all do the last one? What did you cover last time?
We were over at in September. We were at Backfish Brewing, and it was our International Brewmasters preview show for the big Brewmasters Festival that happens in Galveston over Labor Day weekend.
Brewmasters is amazing.
Oh, it's awesome! I love that fest so much. I think I love it because every year I work the VIP room.
Yeah,
I think that's the reason why I love it so much. No, that's actually not the reason. I love Clifton and Constance Darby, who are the organizers. They've been friends of mine for quite a while now. They're just absolutely great people.
Oh, I have friends.
And that whiny voice that you hear is Chris Hart from the Houston Whiskey Social joining us again.
Oh well, look, another festival organizer.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's because you're our friend.
Yeah, yeah. I had a blast last time I was on. From what I remember of it, it was a liquor heavy event for sure.
It was
just like today. I mean, we're sitting on 1, 2, 3.
Looks like
ten,
a forest. 18,
10, 10 18, bottles,
20, 25,
10 bottles, and 70. Definitely a DWI. So,
and then we're missing Ryan and Drea. They couldn't make it today, but we had to squeeze these episodes out. So. Let's get it started. What do we have for the beer of the month?
So for Thanksgiving coming right around the corner, this is a beautiful fest beer season. And Saloon Door Brewing, who we visited back in May, has brought a very beautiful pumpkin beer for the city of Houston. They're just calling it their pumpkin ale. But this is a Belgian-style pumpkin saison.
So, yeah. That's
it's really good. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I love
now, because I could not be any geekier about the beer that I choose for beer of the month.
Boulevard has a pumpkin.
They do funky,
sour, right?
They do funky pumpkin. You have Timmermans and Lindemans that both make a pumpkin lambic. You have quite a few breweries across the world that do pumpkin sours. And the interesting thing about that is because your gourds. And specifically, your Landrace gourds have the right fermentables and the right bacterial strains and the right resistances to alcohol that you can turn them into traditional Landrace sour style beers. And in the case of pumpkin, butternut squash, honey nut squash, and a couple of others, acorn squash especially, you can make really good Belgian style kind of adjunct fest beers out of them because of the sugar strains. So, you know, really and truly, when it comes down to alcohol, like I've been saying this entire year, it's not about where you get your sugars from, it's how you use them. And in the case of pumpkin and other fleshy gourds, you end up with a situation where you actually have a whole wide range of ingredients that you can use to make sort of that fest beer style year round. And all of them lend themselves very well towards Belgian yeast cultures. So in the case of the pumpkin ale from Saloon Door Brewing, they had just finished a batch of their saison, and the pumpkin ale was coming out of the kettle going through cold crash and needed a home and a fermenter, and they literally poured it over their saison yeast, and lo and behold, who'da thunk it?
Who'da pumpkin? Is that what you said?
No, I said who'da thunk it.
Oh, I was like,
it's been funny. Oh, been
oh, who'da pumpkin. That's a good name for a pumpkin beer.
Yeah.
Who'da pumpkin.
Who'da pumpkin. It would have been way funnier if I'd said who'da pumpkin.
Well, I could tell you, you know, a few years back I cut back on beer because of how many pounds I was putting on, and whiskey fixed everything. Fixed my cholesterol, fixed my well, I mean, I could still stand to lose a few pounds, but this is really good. It's been a while since I've gotten to beers, and I've always loved pumpkin beers, the fall beers, the dark beers, the stouts. It's really good.
One of the things that I like about this one in particular, though, Jesus, is the fact that they don't try to overshadow the pumpkin with spice notes. So you don't get a whole lot of nutmeg. New Belgium does that
with their Pumpkinator or whatever it is.
Pump kick.
Yeah,
and then you've got Pumpkin from Dogfish Head. That's over the top. I mean, even Crunkin' Pumpkin as a stout and Pumpkinator as a stout. They're playing into the stout aspect with the spices, and it's really not necessarily a pumpkin beer. In the case of this one, and then you've also got Harpoon's Imperial Pumpkin that comes out later this year, as well as Wasatch Brewing out of Utah. They do a straight pumpkin ale. Yeah. The spice isn't the point. The point is actually the fall flavor. And in the case of utilizing a Belgian yeast culture along with a Landrace gourd that you can find basically everywhere in America, you've made a very American beer.
Now, I honestly fucking hate pumpkin beers. I don't know. It's just something about them.
Are you allowed to say fuck on the podcast?
We can kind of say whatever we want.
You just said it. So.
Oh, I wasn't sure if you just said it. So yeah. I wanted to make sure it was okay.
Yeah, no. I really don't like pumpkin beers. They most of them, like I said, is they concentrate too much on that spice, and that's turned me off from it. But this one, very balanced. That Saison brings that spice down a lot.
Well, and Saison as a yeast culture is naturally spicy also, which is mm-hmm. really weird. So in the case of having sugar sweet style like spices, offset by the natural like peppercornness of a Saison yeast culture, you really get more of a savory beer, which is really cool because savory beers this time of year, just like table red wines and various types of whiskey, whether it be Speyside Scotch, whether it be Kentucky Straight, whether it be Irish whiskey, all of those really lend themselves towards food. And this beer is perfect for Thanksgiving dinner next week.
No, I agree with that. And Reyna said peppercorn. I'd like to give it a shout out to the second place beer of the month, Buffalo Bayou's Rotund.
Rotundin, yes.
Yeah, love that beer. I had so much of that at Brewmasters. But their new series, their tropical one.
That thing is a beer of beauty, and I kind of hate Russell for making it because I'm going to drink way too much of that over the course of the next year or so. It's everything that I love about Lillikoi Kepalo, but without it being a wheat beer. Like, I love Lillikoi from Avery.
Yeah, Avery.
Don't get me wrong. I love Avery Lillikoi. But the way that they made the Rotundin Tropical, you know what Rotundin is, right?
It's the actual name. It's the what goes in wine, right?
It's one of the primary enzymes and chemicals that creates wine during fermentation. And as far as an overall review of the Saloon Door Brewing's
offerings
are concerned, well, as far as the pumpkin is concerned, because what I do for beer of the month now is do a live review on air, and then I rate it based on the Untappd 5-star rating system.
You know, I just recently got into, you're talking about Tapped, the app?
Yep, Untappd app.
Yeah, or Untappd, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, well, I mentioned her earlier, Christy Jerfy from local Rosewater, mentioned the app, and I'd seen it like once or twice before, but it's essentially a check, you know, it's like Foursquare for beer, and it mm-hmm. it's pretty awesome. The problem is just having the time to check
I
in every
so much on it. So
I'm giving this a 3.5 out of 5,
which is not bad. Remember, it's very good.
Definitely
coming from Eric,
definitely not bad coming from me, considering the fact that I called Saloon Door's Vanilla Cream Ale one of the greatest things I've ever drank, and it got like a 2.7. I'm just picky. I'm picky, and I'm a beer douche from time to time.
You could shorten that a little bit. Beer douche.
Just take the picky part out?
Just take the beer part off.
Oh.
That's a kid. That's a kid.
Look here, Mr. I brought 12 whiskeys to a beer fight.
Well, to be fair, I actually carry a case of whiskey in my truck at all times. So it wasn't
not a dealer.
Purposefully planned these, although I did bring
You brought a couple of these on purpose.
The Pure Malt on purpose and the Tolman Tool on purpose. The Highland Park just happened to be in the car. Mm-hmm. It's an independent bottling of Highland mm-hmm. Park. It's young. It's interesting.
Is that who I think that is?
That's a rum, yeah. It's a high proof rum.
Oh, yes, it is.
59 and some change.
Let's move on to the whiskey of the month.
Yeah,
booze of the month.
That's it. Before we get going.
So, are you going to talk about it or do you?
No, please go right ahead.
So, you know, Houston is a fantastic beer city. It's something that we definitely pride ourselves on, as evidenced by just in a few short years. Carbach came around in 2011.
Yep.
Yeah. In just a few years, the InBev bottomed out. So. Houston is, and they're the second largest beer producer in the state of Texas, right next to Shiner. So they definitely exploded, which was weird because I thought St. Arnold had surpassed them or had been ahead of them. Anyways, I digress. The point is that a favorite of mine, Glenfiddich, partnered with an IPA beer master, and whatever that means, and essentially came up with an idea of aging. They're doing an experimental series. They've done a few, or they did two. They've released two, and they're going to be doing a few more, from my understanding. But essentially, it's a Glenfiddich IPA. It was just released in Houston, and the Houston Whiskey Social will be doing the release to the public next month. Essentially, what it is they've seasoned a bourbon cask with an IPA and finished their whiskey in it. It is a very interesting, and obviously, it's a very interesting whiskey, and it's their introduction or their segue for beer drinkers into the world of single malts.
I like Eric's face.
Eric is trying not to have an aneurysm, but he's failing, and that left eye is arm is numb.
Compared, well, before you know,
I'm gonna taste it first before I say anything.
I will tell you this: it is a fan. All fluff aside, it is a solid and very tasty and very well priced single malt whiskey from Glenfiddich. That to me is everything. Anyone who drinks bourbon here in Houston knows that there is a lot of fluff around the lore and legend and history behind whatever non-producing distiller, which we'll get into later.
Mm-hmm.
Bullet, I'm talking to you. And the simple fact is, does it taste good? And it tastes good. So I'm eager for you to try it and give your notes on it. But Glenfiddich IPA, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of their second release too, which is Glenfiddich XX or 20.
Yeah, I was looking for that one, but
I don't think it's made it here yet.
Okay.
They're doing it one by one, and this is definitely their point of focus right now. So next month, December 7th, at Federal American Grill, the Houston Whiskey Social will be doing the official release of this whiskey. We've partnered with a local Houston brewery, Texas Beer Refinery, and we will be doing a side-by-side tasting with this Glenfiddich Single Malt IPA whiskey with Texas Beer Refinery's Mexican IPA. So, we will be...
That's weird, sorry.
I'm just really happy you didn't say Catalyst, because you weren't going to drink that whiskey if they were doing a side-by-side with Catalyst.
Why, is Catalyst good?
Catalyst is one of the greatest IPAs ever made.
Really? Really? So then maybe we'll talk about switching it over.
It's because one of the greatest IPAs
I talked ever made. I talked to a gentleman over at TBR, and you know, he loved the idea, and we would definitely do... You know, we just want to kind of compare the two, and not as a contest, but see if you can have something to help pull from. You know, memory is a tricky thing.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to taste an IPA and pick up on those you know, those heavy hoppy notes, and then switch to a whiskey and try to see if you can find any relation,
mm-hmm,
is an interesting experiment. We'll be offering some other things too. They're going to be featuring the Glenfiddich 21 rum cask, as well as the Age of Discovery 19, which is going away. Being able to try a few things that are not cheap and very hard to find, and the whole evening, including, you know, we'll be doing some family style food, will be $40-$45.
It's not bad at all.
When is this?
And it's a keg of that IPA, by the way, so you guys can help us responsibly drain it at no extra charge, and it's going to be an interesting night. Wednesday, December 7th. I know it's a school night, but
What time does it start?
6:30. We'll have a nice early dinner. You know, eat family style bites, try the IPA, try it side by side with the beer, then move on to some more interesting drams. It'll be pretty cool.
That does sound nice.
And I'll tell you right now, knowing Federal, there may be a few extra surprises there, but those aren't to be advertised. I would encourage you to stick around for as long as possible Wednesday.
I work at 7 in the morning the next day.
Raise your hand if you control your own schedule.
Yeah. Well,
No one else?
Okay, all right. Right.
Well, let me tell you this. It won't be a late night.
Okay.
It'll be an early dinner. An early evening, for sure.
We're talking like doors at, you know, doors at 6.
Welcoming,
6:30,
welcome cocktails at 6:30, and we'll start at 7, and we're not doing a full, you know, we're not doing some 5-course meal, some craziness like that that kind of drags the night out. It's going to be focused heavy on the booze, so you guys can really play it up. And, of course, the social factor. The most important part of doing any of this is being able to talk to people while you do it. So it'll be cool. You've been to a few of our things, so
mm-hmm. No, I definitely enjoy the big thing. Stuff, yeah. I enjoy Chris's stuff, and of course the Houston Whiskey Social next year coming up, right?
Yep, it'll be in May. We have our whiskey, our next festival will be in May. We're going to move a little further north.
Oh yeah, it's right by my birthday, I forgot.
May 19th.
Happy birthday and to us.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting.
Where are y'all moving to venue-wise?
So that's being fine-tuned now because we've got a couple of treats that I'm super excited. I haven't said this on anything other than our bourbon group, so I'll go ahead and let the listeners know. We partnered with Preamble Cocktail Lounge. Those of you who know the Clear Lake area know yes. Preamble. And we will be doing, you know, whiskey's geared very heavily towards men. Right, mm-hmm. It's a very stereotypical man drink, and a lot of men will bring their wives along, which is fun and exciting, but there's not a lot there for the women. I thought, you ever had a sidecar? You know, a sidecar is, it's a cocktail mm-hmm. from early 1900s. Mm-hmm. So how cool would it be to have, it's made with cognac, right? How cool would it be, you can do it with a few things, to try a sidecar, which was invented during that time period, with a liquor, a cognac, from bottled in that time period.
Oh, nice.
So you'd be it would literally be like when that cocktail was invented, what the people of that time literally tasted. I mean, it's a throwback to a throwback. We are doing a vintage cocktail series at the event with a Preamble, where we will be featuring half cocktails of 1940s, 1950s, 1960s. We've got gin from the 50s. Gin was a very heavy thing in the 50s. We've got some whiskey from the 40s. We've got some cognac from the 40s and the 60s. And we've got a little bit of everything. But we wanted...
Sounds beautiful.
It's never been done before in Texas. The laws here are very tricky, and you have to be very careful without breaking any laws. But it's something, and it's free. It's all included in the price of admission. Everyone gets to come in and try something. And this way, you can literally try something from that time period. And it's just a, you know, our vintage tasting at the event went really well.
I attended that one, and I was just impressed and blown away with some of the whiskey.
People got to try whiskeys from the 70s, the 80s, and that was fun. Let's go a little further back. Let's try something.
I was genuinely mad that I could not go to the inaugural year.
Yeah, well, don't feel bad. I just want to make it...
I sent my little sister in my stead, but...
I want to take it one step further and give the people of Houston a reason to become nerds. You know, these events largely appeal to either people who are familiar with it or people who wouldn't mind a night out.
Well, see, I'm under the firm belief that when it comes to the history of American drinking, whether it be pre-prohibition or up to modern times, that you should really take the time to not only consider but learn about different eras. So it's like, oh, I love a Cosmopolitan. That's awesome. What do you know about the 1920s?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can't truly... And this is like the one thing that I do hold like completely and utterly like near and dear to my heart when it comes to one of the reasons why I am part of the booze industry, whether it be beer, wine, or spirits, at whatever level I've ever been at,
right,
is the simple fact that it's all about history and knowing who you are. So you can't really truly appreciate what you're drinking in the modern age without understanding where you came from in the first place. The ability to actually go back and try the true cognac sidecar well before the term sidecar became permutated into just a shot on the side of whatever you wanted, or being able to go back to, you know, the 1920s, 1930s and try a true cognac-based Sazerac before it got the permutation of rye whiskey. Like, you really have to understand and have an appreciation for where your favorite drink came from.
Yeah.
Thank you. Before you can really just truly appreciate it for what it is.
But I think anybody living in 2016 can relate to or knows about the 1920s.
To some extent. To some extent. I mean,
No, I mean, everybody.
Like, yeah.
Because we have one thing in common. Great Depression this year. So.
Great Depression technically was in the late 20s to early 30s.
So 20s.
Right.
Shut up.
The 1928 to 1937. Yeah, I think Black Tuesday was in 29, I believe.
But no, I know what you're saying.
I get what you're saying. But the point is, there are two things we're doing this year at the social that have never been done before in Texas. And it's something that is focused on the people. We're not making any extra money for it. It's strictly cost of just trying to find a reason to get people into something fantastic. I mean, I can't tell you how many times. Just it started with every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, someone would bring a bottle to the family gatherings. We would sit down at some point in the evening and have a cigar and share that whiskey or that tequila and try it and drink and just talk. And it was like a very socially focused point of the evening where you're not, no one's talking about drunk Uncle Eddie or unwrapping gifts or all the busyness that happens around the holidays. This is like the moment of the evening where people sit down and just talk to each other.
Like it's built on.
Yeah, and that's all it takes is finding a reason for people to get together.
Speaking of cigars, the other night, for those of you that are in Houston, Friday night actually, when that cold front came in.
Oh, it's glorious.
I smoked my first cigar in a year and drank this IPA whiskey. This IPA whiskey goes really well with cigars. It's got that sweetness.
It's very light-bodied, mm-hmm. and with something as overpowering to the palate as cigars, I definitely understand.
Yep. So, Eric, your thoughts now that you've tasted it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, from a base liquid standpoint, I do thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
I really love the finished product in the bottle. My
frustrations.
I wouldn't necessarily call it frustration so much as I would call it a chief complaint.
Okay.
My chief complaint on this is very simply the fact that if you're going to call this an India Pale Ale whiskey, then it needs to start that way going into the still.
And let me tell you why I disagree with you adamantly.
Mm-hmm.
So, when it comes to laws and decisions in courts, like the Supreme Court.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I know exactly where you're going, and I totally agree with you.
What am I going to say?
You're going to say that
precedence.
Exactly. That's absolutely right. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
Finishing Scotch, sherry finish, Oloroso, Pedro Jimenez, all those things have always been the original product. For instance, Balvenie only has one mash bill.
Mm-hmm.
Every edition of Balvenie, from their 14 or their 12-year-old that's $48 to their 50-year-old that's $28,000. It is the exact same whiskey,
mm-hmm.
and the only difference is the barrel.
Okay, I 100% am on the same playing field with you on that. I totally understand why they did it. I totally get why they did it. I can appreciate why they did it. At the same time, though, don't call it an experimental series IPA whiskey. Call it an IPA barrel finished whiskey, create the marketing a little differently. And you know, maybe my chief complaint is on the spin control of this whole thing, as far as how they actually hold on finished in India Pale Ale beer cask. Can I say the label real fast?
Yeah.
I may change my tune very quickly.
You read it. Yeah.
It says finished. Yeah, never mind. I pull back, it says it right there.
Right in the middle.
Back. Yep, nope. I have no complaints anymore then. Yeah, I completely and utterly retract any complaint that I had about this. And honestly, the liquid's absolutely glorious. Now, what I would love to see, American distillers, is I would love to see somebody take this idea, but actually treat it more like a craft brewer would treat.
Well, for the listeners at home, on the actual tube in the bottle itself, it plainly states finished in IPA casks. So
wow, Eric, what a waste of time. Jeez.
Well,
that's what my chief when they made the announcement. Chris and I actually got into a discussion on Facebook back and forth over that specific complaint that I had about calling it an experimental IPA whiskey. They weren't telling you that, all they told you was that they were aging the whiskey in an IPA cask. They weren't telling you what the casks were. They weren't telling you what the sourcing was. All it was, I mean, it could have been freaking Slovenian neutral oak that wasn't going to do anything for the whiskey, and take one bottle of IPA and just dash it and be like, oh look, there's IPA on the barrel. It's an IPA barrel,
right? Yeah.
The question I would love to ask Glenn Fittick, why not Innocent Gun? For those who don't know about Innocent Gun Brewing, which is not available in Texas yet, unfortunately, Innocent Gun is a Scottish brewery that does nothing but barrel fermentation. Everything they make is directly in the barrel. So they actually do make an oak fermented IPA, which would actually be perfect for what Glenn Fittick is doing.
Well, so they might have there's two reasons why someone might not advertise where they got their IPA from or their barrel from. And it's one, for instance, let's just say if it was a Maker's Mark barrel,
mm-hmm.
Maker's Mark may not want their name being advertised on an inferior product if it ended up being that way. Mm-hmm. Or two, Glenfiddich may not want to advertise the other side of it. They want the focus to be on. It's like,
well, I understand it, but the way that this is explained is that it's a bourbon barrel treated with IPA then finished.
Correct.
Why not just go directly to a brewery in your country?
Yeah.
The Scottish Pride is Scottish Pride. It doesn't matter whether it's
they would have gotten. You mean like Innocent Guns their barrels?
Their barrels, yeah. Because breweries decommission barrels just like wineries and distilleries.
Right, but where do they get their barrels from?
They get their barrels from French wineries,
but only French wineries.
For the most part, it's mostly French oak.
Because in Scotland, Scotland loves to. Anytime you talk to someone from Scotland that knows what they're talking about, they love to talk about how cheap they are,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, you know, for them, French barrels, sherry barrels, they're very, very pricey.
Absolutely, they are.
You know what's really cheap?
Bourbon.
American barrels.
Yep.
Yeah.
American oak is vastly cheaper, anyways.
Lafroy buys all of their barrels, the vast majority of them at least, from Maker's Mark.
Okay, so by bringing up Innocent Gun, before I get called out on this, yes, they make a Caribbean rum barrel aged porter that is absolutely amazing. Yes, they do a standard American bourbon barrel imperial stout. Yes, they do a Slovenian and French neutral oak base ale, and the IPA is first run non-wine treated French oak. I totally understand that. So, but they do make a couple of red wine barrel aged stuff. They make a cherry barrel aged beer that you can find from time to time, as well as a Irish whiskey IPA, which is divine.
Yeah. Well, you know, for whatever reason they had, you know, Glenfiddich. The honest truth is, why go to Innocent Gun to get a barrel when Glenfiddich already has a ton of barrels? They've already got their barrels.
It's more the idea,
right? Yeah, yeah, I mean, I get it. It's more the idea. It's what's the word? Not cost efficient, but it's economic.
Yeah,
pour beer into the barrel you already own, as opposed to going to get another one. So that would be my answer to your question.
And
why
and
not Innocent Gun?
Economics. Yeah, absolutely. I concur completely.
All right, moving on.
Moving on to what?
I thought we were here. You could have just sat back and let us finish the show arguing about it.
I saw him give me the clock. Yeah, I was like, what does that mean? Is the podcast over? Or
no, it's because I rambled.
No offense. I got the art of commas, because there were no commas in your sentences.
Yeah, no. I speak grammatically incorrectly.
Well, how PC do I have to be on this podcast?
You don't.
Okay, so at work earlier, I was having a group chat, and this is a real quick story. I was having a group chat with some people.
Sorry, I just gave Chris
that. About being responsible. You know, a bunch of buddies were talking about how I miss high school. I miss the days where we didn't have the responsibility, and I were typing to each other, and I said I loved fucking high school guys instead of saying I loved fucking high school guys, like comma guys. So commas are very important.
Phrasing.
20 minutes goes by and they're just laughing and calling me. So all I meant was I missed high school because it was a good time in my life, not because I was into dudes.
Oh, good old high school. How old I get? They always stay the same age.
Real quick. For those of you that listen to the SCN podcast, since we don't have Ryan and Drea here, Sean came down.
Yeah.
What's up, man?
Also, hi. Sean was at the Whiskey Social last year.
You both were.
Yeah, he told me.
That night was a blur, I'm telling you.
And so he's learning a lot more.
I felt like I was being led around by your palate that night.
You guys had fun, right?
I mean, it was a blast. Yeah.
Unlimited booze.
I remember the one whiskey that you had were most impressed by that night was the Jefferson's. They were doing the wine stuff.
Mm-hmm. The Grog cask.
The Grog
cask. Which has just been stopped and replaced with the rum cask. Well, so if you see it on the shelf, buy it up.
Go get one.
Jefferson. Okay, yeah.
Because I remember you were like, this tastes so good.
Well, I mean, full disclosure, I went to that not actually being like a big whiskey drinker. And Because it's one of those things that it's one of those things where you don't realize the variety of taste until someone actually takes you and goes like, okay, here's a variety of taste. It's like people that don't like beer when all that was ever in their house was Budweiser and Coors.
Don't get me wrong, I do have a guilty pleasure of Red Label Budweiser from back in the day. If something reminds me of my uncle or
I can just, see that though.
You know, my abusive father or something. Like, you know, if you enjoy that, there's definitely an abusive member in your family, but
But I mean, it is definitely one of those things where it's important to have someone to kind of like lead you in. And
right.
I remember like the first kind of like, I guess, quote unquote craft beer I ever had was like went to my uncle's for Thanksgiving like so many years ago. And he had like a Sam Adams cherry wheat. And I was like 16. And he was like, here, taste this. And that was enough to kind of say like, oh, there's different flavors. And it's not just, you know, this one type, and then go on from there.
Well, I know,
and that was my experience with whiskey, too.
I know you're bigger
into... Everyone was like, oh, man, here's take this Jack Daniels. And then it's like, okay.
I know you're bigger into wine, so...
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's why that Jefferson's really got to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm way more tuned on the sweet...
The sweet side of
on
it.
On the sweeter spectrum.
Yeah, and that's...
You're more, like, on bitters and...
Try that drop in there.
That's the thing. That's the thing with bourbon is the American palate is so much sweeter. We enjoy it. We enjoy our sugars, as evidenced by our overwhelming amount of diabetics in this country. Bourbon is so much sweeter and heavier on the brown sugar, and then you throw in sherry, that sweet wine, and it just every part of that is just. It's a nice treat. What do they call it? A digestif, an after dinner delight.
Technically, sherry is an aperitif. It's supposed to open the palate.
Or
like a porter or something like that.
I'm just saying there are some whiskeys out there that are there. Speaking of non distilling producers, Angel's Envy Rye Cask, that rye rum finish, that's a very much a digestif. It's a very after dinner sweetness.
Agree. Yeah, I mean, in my house, I did grow up on, you know, hey, here's your limoncello, you know, because my dad's very Italian, and so he would have that, and he'd make his own, and so we're very used to that kind of, like, super tart.
It's a dessert, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's what you finish it off with, is, like, just a little sipping liqueur.
And that's, you know, that's something that's not, it's not part of our culture very much, and it's something I've always enjoyed. Is the dessert side of things. Yeah. Go ahead. Get the light again.
Well, no, so...
We digressed a lot.
We digressed
Thanks
a little
for missing
bit.
See,
it
See, I thought we
Thank
were...
Thank you, Sean.
I thought this is what we're here for, is the conversation. We're like, no, we got to get back to it.
It's fine.
No, it's okay, Dad. I'm sorry.
Go get me some Budweiser, son.
You crazy kids. No, so
it's because I know Eric had a big topic that he wants to hit on.
It's going
to
be a big one, I promise.
Yeah, it is.
Meanwhile,
it's going to take a little while.
Some of
these problems. I just got here, so I don't know how long this has already been going on. I don't know.
Okay, so,
two hours,
so
please.
Help us turn it off.
The big topic of discussion, and this is one that Chris and I have been kind of very slowly over the, I don't know, like probably over the past like 6 weeks or so, just kind of very slowly hashing out.
We've been trying not to talk about it too much.
We really have been trying not to. But the topic is, and bringing up Angel's Envy is was a perfect segue. Mass distillation houses and their the overall vision that they put on top of like brands, because you have so many different bulk distillation houses. Just like in the wine world, you have bulk juice farms like Gallo that make 500 different types of wines, and you have contract brewers all over the nation that make various brands of beer. The three big ones in the state of Texas being Frio out of Budget Brewers from Tennessee. You've got Hebrew that's part of Schmaltz Brewing Cooperative out of Long Island, and Clown Shoes Brewing that's made by Mercury Brewing out of Massachusetts. And what we've seen is that the industry and the consumer base has been a lot more appeasing towards the idea of like Prisoner coming from Gallo now, or like one of the biggest brands in the state of Texas right now being Clown Shoes, actually not made at a true production facility. But then you look at posts on the Houston Bourbon Society and on Facebook, or you look at
Out to Houston Bourbon Society.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
If you're in Houston and you enjoy anything having to do with alcohol,
and you like societies,
Houston Bourbon Society.
Houston Bourbon Society,
started by the man to my left, Chris.
Actually,
Hart.
Not. It was started Son by a gentleman named Matt Phillips. I joined very shortly after it became a thing, and it has definitely exploded. We are north of 500 members. Just crossed that line recently. But so back to the topic, what is your stance on what are you saying, positive or negative? Like,
Wolfburn is delicious.
I've never had Wolfburn. Here's the thing about Wolfburn. It's a brand new distillery. They took over basically a place that was in ruins, brought it back to life. I don't believe this expression's made to the States yet. I bought it overseas, none of your business where. And it's fantastic.
It is.
Now,
it
when
is
you talk
beautiful.
About craft product, that's craft product.
You can tell.
And it is got a very slight smokiness to it, but it's not overpowering. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so back to the subject.
Okay,
what are your thoughts on positive, negative?
Okay, so my big question, because I have my own stance on this as being a career industry member. But I know that being, especially with everyone else here at the table, it's more of a consumer base from the industry side, with the exception of you, who is very very quickly becoming sort of a figurehead inside of the beer industry, inside of the bourbon industry here in the city.
That's a stretch, but okay.
Close enough. I mean, you have your own bourbon
festival.
I enjoy
it. Yeah,
you're a figurehead inside of the bourbon society here, sir. My biggest
question later on, though, for
okay.
you about
yeah.
My biggest question that I really have, and I want to get more of an elaborate take on from you, is the impact of these mass distillation houses as far as towards like brand valuation and brand visibility. Because you know, over the you know, when I think of whiskey, like growing up, I think of Jim Beam, I think of Crown Royal, I think of Jack Daniels, I think of Weller, I think of
those are some classic
historical brands. Now, granted, I grew up in El Campo, Texas, which is literally like an hour and 30 minutes south of here, which is you know, at its max population of me growing up was like 14,000 people. So the microcosm which I grew up in is very very limited, and I didn't really start gaining my alcohol education until I moved to Houston in 2001. But even then, I've seen a massive influx of brands, especially on the bourbon side, bourbon and whiskey side, over the past couple of years. And it actually got me thinking about the fact that there might be a Gallo style distillation house that's contract distilling for a lot of these brands that are coming in. And for example, like one of the bottles we have in front of us, Faultline.
Do you know anything about it?
Not enough. I wish I knew more, and I'm about to ask you to tell me more. But it says on the back of it, distilled in Indiana, bottled by Smooth Ambler Spirits Company.
That's right.
And so that's where I'm kind of going to, because we're just now as... And I've said it for about a year now, and I know I'm being long-winded on this before I get to you. That, you know, we're kind of at like year 8 or 9 of our beer... craft beer renaissance.
Yeah.
And Texas as a state has iconically been 30, 40, 50 years behind the rest of the nation when it comes to alcohol. So when it comes to whiskey and when it comes to spirits, we're really at like year 3. And so we haven't gone through like right around year 3, year 4 of a renaissance in one phase of the industry is when you really get the argument of, hey, this isn't being made by the proprietors. We saw it with wine 15 years ago, we saw it with beer about 4 years ago. Now we're seeing it with whiskey, and it seems like it's the same argument over and over again from like an industry standpoint. Where yes, you just kind of deal with it, but also like the argument about the IPA whiskey from Glenfiddich is that it really is about the liquid. So if you have really good liquid, does it really matter where it's coming from? What are your thoughts on like the entire idea?
So. There's a lot to cover. That even though that question ultimately felt like one question, it was a lot of questions. So, one, I will agree. Although we've seen continued growth in the whiskey industry the last 6 years or 10 years, the last 3 years, 4 years in Houston has seen an explosion and everything from beer to whiskey to cigars.
Oh yeah, distilleries too.
All of those classic sinful activities of smoking cigars and drinking beer and whiskey and wine as well. You know, Hack Out of Alvin is fantastic. Santa Fe is Pasadena's LaPorte.
I live a block away from that winery, so I gotta, you know.
Yeah. It's a good stuff can come from your back door.
Yeah, it's the simply, Madeira is award-winning.
Their Madeira is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Baked apples, it's a Christmas time treat. You know, it's funny side story. One year for New Year's, my mother-in-law, who is probably the most kindest and sweetest and saintly and well-behaved and proper young woman she is at 65 or something. And at New Year's, she had a glass. Well, every time the glass got half full, I'd top it off. And come the drop of that ball at midnight, she was a whole different person. Bottle was gone. But she, you know, it's a fantastic, really good wine, and it's right here in Santa Fe. So,
that's
to
really
answer your question, moment. I think that originally what happened, we've gone through a transition of perception, right? Perception is key. Perception is truth. It's something that applies to all walks of life. When the whiskey surge started, there came a lot of bullshit. Everyone was putting all these fantastic history stories on their bottles,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them were flat-out lies. Templeton Rye is someone that's been sued over it. They lie to the consumers. The problem is when you have something that's genuinely good, and Templeton's a good product, people are going to look into it. People are going to obsess about it. They're going to want to know everything there is to know about it. And if you lie, it's coming out.
If you say you were from the 20s, people are going to want like signs from the 20s to collect and
verification.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, if you say you've got a letter from the 20s, they're going to look at the paper from that time period and see if it's the same kind of paper from that. They're going to look for other clues. So originally, to answer your question, I think these mass distilling houses had a slight against their reputation. The real whiskey nerds, anyone, you know, Avatar was a good film, but ask a hipster and they hated it. It was essentially blue Pocahontas. I mean, it was not a bad story.
It really was.
It was not a bad story. The visual effects were nice, but because everyone loved it, there was a niche that hated it. And I get it, fine. But the mass producers suffered a lot of slack. You know, LDI, which was LDI, and then in 2011 it sold to MGP. Now it's Midwestern Grain Products, and they produce more than 50 different... And let me change that. They distill and produce juice to give to more than 50 brands. Bullet gets their juice. They were getting it from Four Roses, but some of Bullet's stuff, their rye, comes straight from NGP.
Drake's Whiskey.
Drake's Whiskey, Virginia Black, is an MGP-juiced product. But here's the thing with that. Yes, they produce some dog shit, stuff that I wouldn't drink.
Like Drake's Whiskey?
But I didn't say that. But they also produce Smooth Ambler.
And Smooth Ambler has some fantastic
products. High West, one of the most highly coveted bottles of rye whiskey you can get in our society right now is Midwinter's Night Dram.
And it's made in a mass distillation.
And it's made from MGP. Glorious.
Are those all gone in this area?
No, you can still, from time to time. You got to hunt for it, but you can find it. It's okay. It's very hard to find. The moral of the story is, take away the bull crap. Take away the fluff, the smoke and mirrors, and focus on is this a good product? You know, if it's bottled at 40% and it's full of crap on the bottle, and you know,
and it's the same with craft beer. You know, when you see like, oh, this is Budweiser. We have this history of like, you know, being from the 20s and being America's favorite beer and all this other stuff, but.
Well, that was true.
At one point, because it was what
we were a bunch of hillbillies back then.
Well, no,
because that's what you could get.
Yeah,
you know, but
The thing that I really like is just that I like about your answer, Chris, is the simple fact that you and I actually have the same mentality when it comes to the answer to the question being, what does it matter where it's made?
I agree.
And don't get me wrong, that's the argument that I throw at craft beer nerds. It's the argument that I throw at wine drinkers. And it's the argument that I really want to throw at whiskey drinkers is, what does it matter where it's made? Like, I get it. You want to be able to go to Templeton and just kind of hang out. You want to get to go. You like the idea of going to Lynchburg and getting your bottle of Jack Daniels whenever you leave. You like the idea of going to Maker's Mark, but all of that costs money. And I really don't think that the current generation of drinker, and it doesn't matter whether it's wine, whether it's spirits, whether it's beer, doesn't have the appreciation for the labor of love that truly is production.
Well, and the thing to remember is, a lot of producers start off as non-distilling producers because it is a financially effective way to put out a product and save your pennies until you can actually produce something. Angel's Envy just built their own distillery, and it is glorious. And on top of that, a little known, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong here, but Wild Turkey started off as a non-producing distiller years and years and years and years and years ago.
Wild Turkey was originally produced at Jim Beam.
So you create a product, you save your pennies. Now here's the thing. Even though you aren't necessarily distilling it, you can pick the recipe. So pick a high-quality product, bottle a high-quality product, like your Midwinter's Night Dram, and even more importantly, one of my favorites, Smooth Ambler. Smooth Ambler's got a barrel program that cannot keep up with requests.
Yeah.
They have a waiting list. No one can seem to get their hands on them. I've been trying for months to get my foot in the door just so we could buy a whole barrel for it at our next social. And I've got to text the guy every few months and say, hey, don't forgive me. You put out a quality product, NASA Liquor. They had a single barrel of Smooth Ambler that is now going for as high as $400 on the secondary market.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't know what the secondary market is, all I'll tell you is it's Fight Club, and the first rule of Fight Club is I'm not going to talk about
Fight
it.
Club.
So the point is that those bottles are highly coveted, and they're limited, and Smooth Ambler didn't make them. But Smooth Ambler does make their own stuff. They do actually distill. And everyone's building towards being completely independent. It just takes some time. So don't rule something out just because it's from LDI or MGP or whatever mass-producing distillers out there. Focus on, does it taste good? Is it a good product?
And, I mean, it's like you mentioned earlier, Clown Shoes, amazing beer.
Oh, yeah. Again, my argument is the same as Chris's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm arguing against the detractors. I'm not arguing for it. So with that in mind, I would really like to know what the thoughts are on something like Defiant or Tin Cup that's coming out of an unproven... I see, and I said it right as you were walking away trying to get you to come back to the table.
So, wait, are you saying that it doesn't matter if Budweiser starts brewing Carbox?
No, not at least. As long as it's the same. I mean, it's the... Yeah. And we'll get into that in December. Don't even get me started on that. I will go on a rant like you have never heard. But no, what I'm saying is exactly what Chris just said. It shouldn't matter where it's made or how it's made as long as you like it. Because... I get it, and being a distributor, and being basically just kind of locked in the middle of the three-tier system in the state, one of the things that we fight constantly from a beer standpoint is everyone, and I mean everyone, from the ingredient producer to the buyer at the beer bar to the consumer. They all want to help the brewery.
Yeah.
But no one wants to help the distributor. And that's what we saw with Gallo when Gallo bought Behringer years ago. Because, okay, granted, Behringer, for the record, Behringer White Zinfandel saved the alcohol industry in this nation. I don't care what anybody says. I will thank Behringer until I die, and I'm probably dead 20 years in my grave. I will thank Behringer for Behringer
White Zinfandel. Put that on your gravestone.
You know what? I might do it. Thank you, Behringer White Zinfandel, for my career. But they physically saved the alcohol industry in the nation single-handedly, and they get no credit.
How?
Because they were able, during Prohibition, to sell the White Zinfandel style to the Catholic Church as sacramental wine.
So why does that mean that they saved? How do you translate
they
that?
Behringer was one of seven producers of wine during the actual era of Prohibition that were able to continually produce based under sacramental law. And coming out of Prohibition, they were basically the main driving force to actually rebuilding the alcohol culture inside the nation during the 30s and 40s.
So here's my counterpoint to that. That's a wine standpoint, but bourbon...
I was a wine broker.
But it's... bourbon was allowed... Buffalo Trace, I want to say, is one of the few, if not the only, bourbon producers that could produce during Prohibition.
Really?
Yes, there were several. Yeah. And on top of that, Lafroy was one of the few that was allowed to sell as medicinal liquor during Prohibition because it tasted so bad that no one thought it was going to be worth anything.
Interesting. Okay, so...
Lafroig, bourbon. So bourbon and scotch had a hand in that is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, no, completely... I only knew the wine side of that. I didn't realize that there were actual, like true distilleries, not moonshining, that were actually able to continue to produce. But to go backwards from when you left the table from a few minutes ago...
Yeah, sorry about that, guys.
No, it's all good. What are your thoughts on some of the emerging... distillation regions of the nation? Because it's always been the American Midwest, it's been the Rust Belt, but now we have Tin Cup and Defiant, which are Defiant being a quote Texas whiskey but being made in North Carolina, Tin Cup the same thing. You have
Defiant, you referred to as a Texas whiskey?
Well, no, they call themselves a Texas whiskey, but they're very clearly marked as Asheville, North Carolina. That's a sidebar. It's like okay, so you've seen Leprechaun Cider
I thought you were sorry. I was in the back, and I thought you were going to like. Have you seen Leprechaun, like the movie?
The movie.
So Leprechaun Cider Company is actually owned by a gentleman named Jake Schiffer, who is a Houston native, and he very boldly states that he is a Texas cider company, but all of his juice comes from Oregon. So Defiant, the couple that owns Defiant Whiskey, actually living Katy, and they state that they're a Texas whiskey,
I
but
believe
they're actually from
she's
North
the
Carolina.
Sister. I could be wrong. I'm trying to remember. Her name is Melissa Stolaz, and I think she's the sister, not the wife. I could be wrong. The point is, I'm a huge Defiant fan.
Oh, so am I.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to imply that you were detracting from it. I will say that...
Defiant's good.
I'm a huge fan of Defiant. To answer your question about what do I think,
What are your thoughts on new distilling regions?
So, High West is from a new distilling region-esque...
Utah.
You know, as it continues to move west, you've got Tin Cup and what's the...
Defiant, both of them from North Carolina.
Tin Cup and... what's the name of the snow... It's Snowflake... Silver something. Why am I drawing a blank on this?
Because you're drunk.
No, I'm not. they make Snowflake and... it's a Colorado whiskey with a thing on top of the bottle. They sell it at NASA.
You're talking about Tin Cup?
No, another one. I know Tin Cup is very clearly in my head, and I know people listening to this are going nuts. Like, it's this.
Like a wax thing on top?
No, it's not wax.
No, it's actually an actual, like, cup that you use as a shot.
It's driving me nuts. I know that if I Google image
search... Oh, it's got a yellow label, too.
Yes.
What is it called?
It's a penny? Is it penny?
You're so close.
Oh.
I bet you if I type in Tin Cup and look up Google Images, it'll come up.
No, because I did that. Now I'm getting a Tin Cup whiskey.
This is like a different word for
penny. And Rogue Dead Guy Whiskey penny. Is on this for whatever reason.
No, just keep talking. Fill dead air.
Not Templeton.
Oh, there it is. Stranahan's.
Yaki Da, Stranahan's.
Stranahan's.
I was way off.
So, Stranahan's.
Damn it.
Stranahan's, Colorado. And my favorite of all of them is out of Seattle. It's called.
It's
not Ooh-La, is it? No. why am I forgetting everything tonight? Seattle makes the picture of a tree. They make a peated. Michelle sells it. Shout out to Michelle at Glazers.
Where's it from?
Seattle. From Seattle. They do. In fact, the only store in all of Texas to get a barrel, I believe, is Evergreen Liquor.
Are they a beer distributor? Are they a
no. Brewery? Oh my God. What is going on right now? It's this IPA.
Okay, all I know is I just cracked into a bottle of
rum.
Hamilton St. Lucia Port Still rum, and it is delightful.
Pot Still.
Oh shit, I said Port Still. You're right, Pot Still. I can't read today, apparently.
So I'm gonna text.
What
did you just pour here? Hart Brothers?
These are amazing. Hart Brothers, is this like Kevin Hart?
No, it's Kevin Hart. No, it's an independent bottler. They bottle different whiskeys from different distilleries. That's from Highland Park. It's an 11-year-old. It's young. It's got a nice young bite to it.
It does.
Let's see. What's the name of the barrel?
Chris, would it help? Would it help if we gave you the month and you came back for December to tell us?
You know,
that's to be continued on that.
It's going to drive me nuts. I'm going to figure it out. But in the meantime, I will tell you that there are plenty of different regions that are opening up to just great whiskey all around. And this whiskey out of Seattle is driving me nuts. But they make the only single barrel is going to Evergreen Liquor in Houston, and it's going to be incredible.
Talking about MacArthur's?
No. I've got the picture of the bottle in my head. All I have to do is type in, I guarantee it's Seattle whiskey.
I'm already doing that.
This kind of tastes like weed.
Seattle distilling?
I'm not familiar with it. No.
No, damn.
Well, like the weeds, like if you go to a concert and you smell weed around.
It tastes. I'm not familiar with that drug. I don't
know what you're talking about. Sure. I have never
inhaled. It's called Westland.
Oh!
Westland makes some of the best. You got a bottle sitting on top of your shelf. They make some of the best whiskey on the West Coast.
You just thought about it subliminally. That's why.
Yeah, Sherrywood. That's a fantastic bottle. It's a little pricey, $80, but it's a fantastic bottle. Yeah. Westland. And the only single barrel that this state's going to see
open with your teeth,
is an Evergreen Liquor, and it's supposed to be here in the next few months.
Nice. So, can you stick around for December?
What do you mean? Like, am I leaving?
Well,
no, I live here.
Well, no. What I'm talking about is,
you want me to sit on the couch until?
Well, no. What I'm wondering is can you hang out for the December taping?
Yes, if you guys invite me back, which I kind of was wondering why I haven't been invited back since February. That's got a little butthurt. I mean, was the episode boring?
You know what?
I didn't talk about high school guys.
I won't wait for Jesus. I would love to have you back for December. Because there's just so much more to talk about.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, like I said,
you brought a magical case of whiskey and rum, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, actually, I'm surprised I brought two different rums, which is not...
You're speaking to, like, my heart on this, because I love...
Your heart on? Hearts?
I love
your heart
on?
I wanted to make sure I understood.
You're speaking to my heart when
your
it comes
heart. To okay. I was like, I'm not speaking into your microphone.
You're speaking to my heart when it comes to rum, because rum is what got me to whiskey.
You know, and it's interesting because high proof rum, I was just talking about this about 2 hours ago with the proprietor of Rosewater in Clear Lake, Pasha.
Yes,
son. So rum in the States has taken a...
sip it if you want.
It's riding what I believe is the whiskey coattails. Whiskey's gone through a boom, and not just whiskey, but high proof whiskey. And now you're starting to see a lot of high proof rums. I mean, that's a 60% rum. And that... If you know whiskey and you enjoy whiskey, it's an easy transition into high proof rum because it's barrel aged spirit. Barrel aged spirit is fantastic.
Awesome. Well, dude, thank you for being here for
absolutely.
The show.
Is it over?
For November.
Did we get the thing?
Kind of whatever.
Yeah, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, this is really delicious. This rum.
I mean, do you just want to segue directly into the next show, and we'll just edit out the part that I just said?
No.
I actually haven't met you. I'm Chris.
Hey, Charlie.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
We didn't even finish. Hold
for,
on.
For the continuity of radio. Yes. Yeah, I didn't say anything.
We are going to be doing the December show right after this one, so...
Oh, is that what you meant when you said stick around for the December show?
Correct.
I thought you may come back in a
month. Did you miss the part on Facebook where I said we're doing two shows back to back?
Well, yeah,
regardless of that, are you sure you're showing a little bit how the sausage is made right
now? At the day at the circus!
This is going to be Breathe In, Booze Out for November and on to December.